Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Introduction Part 2. All right, let's dive into something really fascinating today. Picture this. A coach leading some of the most, well, iconic, ego-driven superstars in sports history. We're talking Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal.
Huge names. Huge personalities.
Exactly. And he leads them to an unbelievable 11 NBA championships. So you'd think, okay, this guy must be a super intense drill sergeant, right?
The stereotype, yeah.
But today, we're looking into the mind of Phil Jackson, the guy they called the Zen Master of Basketball. And we're doing it through the insights in his book, 11 Rings, The Soul of Success.
That's right. And our sources here are really comprehensive summaries of 11 Rings. They give us a really full picture of Jackson's approach, which was, you know, unconventional, doesn't quite cover it, but incredibly successful. And this book, it's not just a sports memoir, not at all. It's really a deep look at leadership, mindfulness, how to build truly unified teams. And he pulls wisdom from traditions way outside the usual coaching playbook.
So our mission for you listening in is to really pull out the most important nuggets from Jackson's philosophy. We're going to explore how he kind of redefined leadership, how he dealt with those massive egos.
That's a big one.
Oh, yeah. And what his unique mix of like Eastern philosophy and competitive strategy can teach all of us, you know, whether it's in business, your own life, or, well, maybe pick up basketball. Get ready for some potentially surprising insights. The Chronological Journey Part 3. Okay, so first things first. Who is this Phil Jackson? Beyond the rings, what made him so different?
Well, his background is absolutely key to understanding him. He grew up in Montana and North Dakota, actually, in a pretty strict Pentecostal family, which, kind of ironically, maybe gave him an early sense of group belief, you know?
Huh, interesting. Didn't expect that.
Right. But then later, he went on his own spiritual journey. He explored Native American spirituality, Zen Buddhism, different meditation practices.
Yeah.
It really shaped his whole view of the world.
And his coaching eventually.
Absolutely. And don't forget, he was also a player himself. Won 2 championships with the New York Knicks back in the day.
Right, under Red Holzman.
Exactly. So he saw firsthand what that kind of selfless team-first basketball looked like, what it felt like. He called it his first glimpse of basketball nirvana.
So this wasn't just like some theory he read in a book. He lived it, felt it from the inside.
Precisely. What makes him so qualified, really, is that he could bridge this ancient wisdom stuff some people might dismiss as, you know, soft with the super high-pressure world of pro sports.
He didn't just talk about it.
No, he applied it. Meditation, mindfulness, these philosophical ideas.
Mm-hmm.
He used them to manage Jordan, Kobe, Shaq. Guys with just immense competitive drive.
And huge egos, let's be honest.
And huge egos, yeah. He proved these principles weren't just theoretical fluff. They were practical tools. Tools for getting extraordinary results.
But it wasn't always easy, right? I mean, did players ever just resist? Think it was weird?
Oh, absolutely. There was definitely skepticism, especially early on. You know, players were used to yelling coaches, drills. Then here comes Phil talking about meditation or handing out books on Zen.
Yeah, I can imagine some eye rolls.
For sure. And the early years with Kobe Bryant and the Lakers, that was a real struggle sometimes. Kobe was so driven, so individualistic initially. Jackson talks about it being this constant patient process, trying to plant seeds, not force things. Success wasn't about avoiding resistance for him. It was about working through it. Patiently.
Okay, so after his playing days, he didn't jump straight to the NBA coaching big leagues.
No, he actually paid his dues, you could say. He coached in lower tier leagues, like the CBA, the Continental Basketball Association, and that's where he really started experimenting, honing the triangle offense, trying out his Zen-inspired techniques, kind of away from the big spotlight.
Testing grounds.
Exactly. Then came the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan.
The ultimate test, you'd think.
Monumental challenge, yeah. His first massive task was getting Jordan, maybe the greatest individual talent ever, to truly buy into the team concept, specifically the triangle offense.
Which was Tex Winter's system, right?
Primarily, yes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just X's and O's. It was designed to teach selflessness, collective thinking. Players had to read the game, react together, not just run set plays.
So how did he convince Jordan?
Patiently. Lots of one-on-one talks, team meetings using books, subtle psychological nudges, gradually shifting Jordan's focus from just me scoring to we winning. And that 1991 championship, beating the Lakers, that was the proof. It showed even the greatest star could be even greater within that selfless system.
Okay, and then there's Dennis Rodman. Talk about unconventional. How'd that work?
Rodman, yeah. He was maybe Jackson's most extreme example of compassionate or maybe just understanding leadership instead of trying to force Rodman into a box with rigid rules.
Which probably wouldn't have worked anyway.
Likely not. Jackson tried to understand his psychology. He gave him leeway, space. He accepted Rodman for who he was, and that allowed Rodman to channel all that unique energy for the team. Jackson even called him a modern-day Hayoka, like a secret clown figure in Native American tradition.
Wow, so embracing the chaos, almost.
Harnessing it, maybe. It showed that you could integrate even the most out-there personalities if you led with understanding, not just control. Scottie Pippen was also crucial, of course, the selfless glue guy. Jackson always highlighted that.
Makes you think about teams, doesn't it? Maybe there are Rodmans everywhere who just need a different approach.
It's a fascinating thought. Then, moving to the Lakers. A whole new challenge. Shaq and Kobe.
The dynamic duo. Or dynamic drama, sometimes.
Huh, yeah, both. This period was like a masterclass in managing conflict, managing egos. Jackson saw himself as a mediator. He used different tactics for each. With Shaq, appealing to a sense of fun, history, legacy. With Kobe, constantly challenging him, pushing him to fit his drive into the team structure, into the triangle.
And they won 3 straight championships.
3 straight. With that level of talent and tension, it was maybe his most impressive coaching feat, purely from a psychological standpoint.
And Kobe's evolution under him was huge, wasn't it?
Massive. Kobe started as this incredibly talented but fiercely individualistic kid. But over the years, especially leading into those later championships, without Shaq.
The 2009-2010 titles.
Right. He evolved into what Jackson termed an enlightened warrior. Leading with wisdom, with awareness, not just pure force, those last 2 rings, with a more mature Kobe at the center. That felt like the ultimate validation of Jackson's whole patient, mindful approach. Core philosophy and values, part 4.
So let's really dig into the core of it now. What's the central idea behind 11 Rings? What's his philosophy?
The core thesis really is that true leadership success, the kind that lasts, it doesn't come from just commanding and controlling people.
The old top-down model.
Exactly. Instead, it comes from creating an environment where individuals can actually transcend their own egos and work together as this unified, mindful group. He believed the ultimate win was creating a harmonious, cohesive, even enlightened team. It's about the team's soul.
That really flies in the face of conventional leadership ideas, doesn't it? We usually think of leaders as dominant, the ones in charge.
It totally challenges it. How did he get guys like Jordan, Shaq, Kobe, serious alpha personalities to buy in? That's the million-dollar question.
Right? Yeah, it seems almost too idealistic for pro sports.
Well, he argued that sustained success, the kind they had, comes from inner awareness, from being present. From actively cultivating selflessness, even in the super competitive setting. He used spiritual ideas, Buddhist philosophy, Native American wisdom, not as some add-on, but as part of the core strategy.
So spirituality wasn't separate from winning.
Not for him. He showed they're complementary. That wisdom, that inner focus is a competitive advantage.
And he talked about creating a sacred hoop. What did he mean by that?
Yeah, the sacred hoop concept comes from Lakota Sioux tradition. It's this idea that everyone, everything has its place within this larger interconnected circle. For Jackson, it was about fostering that deep sense of shared purpose, mutual reliance. Every player's role, even off the bench, was vital to the team's balance, its wholeness.
So competition itself could be spiritual?
That's what he believed. If you approached it with the right mindset, focusing on the process, the shared effort, it could be a path for growth, for the whole group reaching something higher together.
So what were the key themes running through this whole philosophy?
Okay. Several big ones stand out. First, definitely mindful leadership and present moment awareness. Yeah. Just teaching players to stay grounded. Not dwelling on a missed shot. Not worrying about the final buzzer. He had that mantra, one breath, one mind. Simple, but powerful for focus.
Keeping them centered in the chaos.
Exactly. Then, transcending ego for collective success. This was huge. Helping superstars see that making their teammates better didn't diminish their own stardom. It actually amplified it. That phrase, surrender the me for the we, that was a constant refrain.
Easier said than done with some of those guys.
Oh, for sure. A constant effort. Third, the integration of spiritual wisdom with practical strategy. This was radical. Buddhist ideas like non-attachment, using Native American talking circles for team meetings, Zen concepts like beginner's mind. These weren't just philosophical chats. They became actual coaching tools.
He also used compassion as a coaching tool, right? Which seems counterintuitive in sports.
Very counterintuitive to the tough guy coach image. But Jackson believed compassion built trust, loyalty. He wasn't ruling by fear. Think about how he handled Rodman that was compassion in action, trying to understand rather than just punish.
Okay, and what about this invisible leader idea?
Yes. That's fascinating. It was about empowering players to think for themselves, to solve problems on the court without always looking to the bench.
Yeah.
Jackson wanted to make himself less necessary over time, trusting the team's collective intelligence.
Letting go of control.
Which takes courage. And finally, maybe the most famous one, the journey is the reward. He constantly tried to shift the focus away from just the championship, the ring.
Forget the ring, he said.
Exactly. Focus on the daily practice, the effort, the relationships, the process of getting better together. He believed finding joy in that journey was actually more fulfilling and ironically often led to the desired outcome anyway. Three pivotal turning points, part five.
All right, let's pinpoint three moments. Three specific turning points that really shifted Jackson's path or solidified his philosophy.
Okay, three crucial ones. First, I'd say it has to be convincing Michael Jordan to fully embrace the triangle offense and team play.
Back in the early Bulls days.
Yeah, that was the fundamental battle, really. Jordan was already a phenomenon, but Jackson knew sustainable greatness, championship greatness, required more. It needed that collective buy-in. Succeeding there proved his system could elevate even the absolute peak of individual talent. It changed the Bulls, it changed Jordan's legacy, and honestly, it changed basketball.
Okay, that's a huge one. What's number two?
Second, I think it's his handling of Dennis Rodman. It was so unconventional.
Yeah, we touched on that. Not trying to fix him.
Right. Instead of strict discipline, he chose understanding, compassion, giving Rodman specific leeway within the team structure. It wasn't about lowering standards. It was about finding a different way for that specific person to contribute his unique energy. It showed that leadership could be flexible, inclusive, and still incredibly effective. It really expanded the definition of team management.
Finding a place for the outlier.
Precisely. And the third pivotal moment, for me, it's the transformation of Kobe Bryant, specifically from that brilliant but often individualistic young player into the team-first leader of those later Laker championships.
That wasn't overnight, though.
Not at all. Years of work. Conflict, mentorship, pushing, pulling. But Kobe eventually embracing that invisible leader idea, leading with wisdom, not just scoring. That really felt like the culmination of Jackson's entire approach. Seeing Kobe mature into that kind of leader, that was the ultimate proof of concept for patient, mindful development. Human Lessons in Reflection, Part 6.
Okay, this is where it gets really relevant for all of us, I think. Beyond basketball, what does Jackson's life, his struggles, his successes, what does it teach us as humans?
So much. I mean, his whole journey really highlights how our own ego, our own desire for individual recognition can often be the biggest barrier, not just in sports, but in anything we do collectively.
In work, in family.
Everywhere. And his lesson wasn't about destroying the ego, but about learning to manage it, to redirect that competitive fire towards a shared goal. He showed that when you do that, you don't actually lose anything. You gain connection and often greater success.
And his willingness to bring in unconventional ideas, Zen Native American traditions.
Yeah, that's a big lesson too. It teaches us to look beyond the standard solutions, you know, to find wisdom where maybe we wouldn't expect it. It's about being open, being curious, realizing that good ideas can come from anywhere. It also highlights how important self-awareness is for any leader, authenticity.
It also speaks volumes about resilience, doesn't it? I mean, he wasn't always winning. That 2004 Lakers team, the super team that fell apart, that must have been rough.
Absolutely rough. And he talks about it. He saw failure not as the end, but as, well, a necessary teacher. A lesson in humility, an opportunity to learn and adjust. He learned the limits of his own influence then. His philosophy is really about staying present through the challenges, learning from them, not letting setbacks shut you down.
Like he said, the test isn't avoiding failure.
Because you won't. It's whether you learn from it or let it paralyze you. That's a huge lesson for anyone facing tough times.
And that invisible leader idea, again, empowering others, it sounds great, but actually letting go of control, especially when the pressure's on, that's hard.
Incredibly hard. It requires real trust. Trust in your people. Trust in the process you've built. Jackson learned that real power, lasting power, comes from building teams that are strong and self-reliant enough to lead themselves.
Like him being quiet in timeout sometimes?
Exactly. Forcing the players to figure it out together. It's about creating the conditions for success, setting the stage, and then having the courage to step back a bit. That applies everywhere. Managing a team, raising kids, even managing yourself. Trusting yourself to handle things. Real-life applications and insights, Part 7 transition.
So let's bring this home. What does all this mean for you listening right now? How can we take Jackson's insights and actually use them?
They're surprisingly practical, really. If you're a leader in a professional setting, think about the triangle offense idea. Maybe it means empowering your team members more, letting them make decisions collaboratively, intuitively, instead of everything needing top-down approval.
Less micromanaging.
Definitely. Or think about compassionate leadership, like with Rodman. Is there someone on your team who seems difficult? Maybe try understanding their unique perspective or motivations instead of just enforcing rules. And mindfulness, even just taking a few moments to breathe and reflect before a big meeting, can improve your decisions, keep you calm under pressure. The invisible leader pushes you towards mentoring, not just managing.
Okay, what about for just personal growth?
Jackson's call to lead from the inside out is huge for self-awareness. Understanding your own triggers, managing your emotions, and that focus on the journey, not the destination, that can seriously reduce anxiety. If you're training for something, learning something new, finding joy in the daily effort itself makes the whole thing more sustainable, more enjoyable. Mindfulness in everyday tasks brings more presence.
And for parents or teachers.
The idea of creating a sanctuary, like Jackson did for his teams, a space where kids feel safe to try things, even fail, without harsh judgment. That fosters resilience, curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
His less is more style encourages guiding, asking questions, rather than just giving answers or micromanaging homework. It helps kids develop independence, think for themselves, building trust so they can solve problems.
So it's really about fundamentally shifting how we approach working together and achieving things. The process matters as much as the result.
Exactly. It's a deeper way of thinking about success. Three final takeaways, part 7.
Okay, to wrap up our deep dive on 11 rings, what are the three absolute core takeaways Phil Jackson leaves us with?
All right, three key insights. First, an emotional insight. Probably the most powerful emotional lesson is that deep, lasting success and real fulfillment. They don't come from crushing egos, but from the courage to transcend them for something bigger than yourself. That creates this profound sense of connection, collective joy. It's about synergy, finding that shared purpose.
Yeah, that really resonates. Well, what about intellectually?
An intellectual insight. Intellectually, the biggest takeaway is his radical reshaping of what leadership even means. He proved undeniably that things often dismissed as soft skills, mindfulness, compassion, trust, ancient wisdom, are actually incredibly potent, practical tools for getting hard results, especially in super competitive fields. Consciousness is a competitive edge.
Okay, and the universal lesson. The one we can all apply.
A universal insight. The most practical universal lesson is simply this. Shift your focus. Move it from the outcome, which is often out of your direct control anyway, to the process, to the mindful present moment journey. When you do that, you not only tend to perform better, but you find a much deeper, more sustainable sense of meaning and satisfaction in whatever you're doing. Like you said, the ride becomes the reward. Outro narration part 8.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.